Good morning, Vikings fans. This is Morning Joe's, brought to you by Grey Duck Vodka, the premier Minnesota vodka, which is owned by Vikings legend Mr. Chad Greenway, who's a friend of the show. I am Joe Johnson, owner of PurplePTSD.com, VikingsTerritory.com, and PurpleTerritoryRadio.com. Here with, again, Mr. Kirby O'Connor. What's up, man?
Not much, just hanging out, still waiting on child.
Yeah.
So, it's really, really getting impatient at this point.
Actually, your wife's in labor, but this takes precedence, so...
she is not yet, although she might be. She hasn't messaged me from work in like an hour, so maybe she is.
Hey, just putting a name idea out there. Do you know if it's? Did you guys know what the gender is?
Yeah, it's a boy.
So it's gonna be named Joe.
No, we actually have we've had a name picked out for like a year and a half now. So.
Ooh.
Yeah, I will not reveal it on the show.
You're killing me.
I'll text it to you later.
Okay. Kirby is the managing editor of Purple PTSD. Spoiler alert, that title is fluid, and once I Google what is a better title than managing editor, he'll have a different title, but... He's kind of a jack of all trades. He joined the site, I want to say, 2-3 months ago, maybe? Or no, when was that?
Mid to late December. So, yeah, okay. three, 4 months ago.
Ugh, it seems like a lot longer than that. He was on the show last time, but I wanted to have him back because we went for like an hour and a half, had the longest show ever, and we still had like a ton of stuff we wanted to talk about. Really quickly, also, Kirby is the host of a relatively new podcast called Vikings on the Clock, which you can find on all three sites, namely PurpleTerritoryRadio.com, as that's a new site for us and we want to plug it. It's a draft-related podcast. So, 'tis the season for that. One of the strangest things about doing this show in general with Joe is it seems like every time something earth-shattering happens, it's about 20 minutes after I post the show. That's actually why I started Periscoping, because I think it was when they got rid of... God, what is wrong with me? DeFilippo. That happened like 5 minutes after we got off the air. And the same thing happened last week with the Anthony Barr situation. And it was just like, man, this podcast did not age well at all. It's been like 5 damn minutes. I was ranting and raving about how free agency was going and what a nightmare it was. And so while it's kind of old news because that happened last Tuesday... I wanted to touch on it a little bit just because it was such an earth-shattering thing. It's not something I've ever witnessed happening for the Vikings, obviously, but even in the NFL, it's rare that people, you know, go through the process that far and basically on the day or the day before of signing the actual contract and putting pen to paper, he just changed his mind and... I wanted your thoughts on that and kind of wanted to also just really quickly touch on the rationale, like what you thought was the reason behind it. Like for me, I kind of felt like, you know, Barr is a little sensitive when it comes to like the media or how the coaches talk about him in the media. And I thought maybe he didn't want to enter like the most brutal sports media market. In the country, if that was part of it, or if he's just so close to the guys on the defense that he wanted to stay.
Yeah, I am not entirely sure. You know, I'm not in his head, but you may raise an interesting point.
What am I paying you for?
I don't know exactly. I guess just to speculate on random draft prospects. no, but I, you know, it could possibly be that he doesn't, you know, handle media attention as well as, you know, not that he doesn't handle it well, but he doesn't enjoy, you know, the media attention. And he doesn't have the, he might not have the Marshawn Lynch in him to just say, I'm just here not to get fined, you know, to everything.
Yeah.
He might be one of those guys who he wants to give an answer and he wants to be honest with the media, but like, it's the media, and some of us, I guess, are not That's the best right. people, and they push for the sound bites and they push for the, you know, the grippy headlines. But I think it mostly comes down to like you said, his relationship with the defense and his relationship with the coaches, despite the few reports of Zimmer saying, you know, he's a player who can coast, you know, whatever. I think Zimmer absolutely loves him, and he expects a lot out of him. I think that's what leads Zimmer to, you know, frustratedly say, well, he coasts sometimes, or maybe say some things that you know, aren't really indicative of, you know, Zimmer's feelings towards him, because I think he really loves him and he relies on him to
do like 100 things.
Yeah, and I think probably the biggest thing, and the Vikings shared a video of it. I think the biggest player who brought back Anthony Barr was actually Everson Griffin.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, they showed that short, like 5-second video where it was pretty much just like, Griffin was like, hey, he didn't say it in so many words, but he was basically like, let's get to work because we're both back here. You know, we made sacrifices to be here, be together. So let's get to work and get this thing done. And I think Everson Griffin, you know, showed his leadership and brought back Anthony Barr.
His selflessness too. I mean, he took a $3 million pay cut. He's gone through a lot, and maybe from a PR perspective, and I didn't really see a lot of this, which I was surprised with, but going through a mental health thing, you know, I saw a lot of people saying, well, he owes the team for what he put them through, which I don't think is very fair. And we talked about this a lot last week, so we don't need to get into it, but, you know, mental health, especially with, like, all the stuff going on with concussions and CTE, is a legitimate thing, and it's not necessarily like an ACL tear or something you can do an MRI on, but it's not like he was, you know, it was within his control, obviously. But I do think it speaks to a larger point. You know, I haven't been the biggest Anthony Barr guy. You know, I do think he has the ability to do a lot, but sometimes that if he's banged up or maybe upset or something, that he can be exploited a la the Rams game. But the biggest thing for me with free agency, outside of attempting to do something with the offensive line, but that's part of it, is limiting the amount of needs that they're going to have going into the draft. Because I was thinking, you know, a lot of people thought Everson Griffin was gone. We talked a lot about that we expected it to happen by like last Friday, if I remember correctly. And I didn't want to go into the draft with, okay, now we need an RB2. We need a Mike linebacker that can do a million different things, you know, rush the passer, drop back into coverage, a good edge rusher, and now, like, a bunch of guards. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
yep,
it,
no, that's,
it,
yeah.
It salvaged the start of free agency to me because if people listen to the show, I was apoplectic about the state of things, and I think that to put a bow on the bar thing, I mean, they were seemingly negotiating that contract forever, for more than a year. And yep. I always thought he just wants a max deal. There's a disconnect. And so I thought people, when I saw it on our internal chat system, I thought they were like doing an early April Fool's joke. I just couldn't believe it. So I'm in a lot of a better mood in regards to where the team is and, you know, how the draft is going to go, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, and Kevin and I talked about this on the episode of Vikings on the Clock that'll be coming out tomorrow. We talked about how, and I won't give too much away, we talked about how signing Anthony Barr and Josh Klein, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes, but signing those two guys filled two, at least, you know, the Barr filled a huge need, and then the Klein deal filled, you know, at least part of your need significantly. So you can now, at 18 in that first round, you have a lot of fluidity and a lot of flexibility to go with the best player available, or move back and pick up extra draft capital.
That's my unless there's somebody that is a really good fit, I wouldn't be against trading down.
I was only half joking with Kevin when I suggested that the Vikings take Greedy Williams at 18 if he's available, the cornerback. So
oh my god. That'd be the end of me. So that's a really good question, and this wasn't on the agenda. But as our draft expert, the original managing editor of the new draft section, Kirby's more of an editor, really. I mean, you kind of dictate a lot of the stuff. How do you feel about that philosophy of best player available? You know, I feel like I've had a lot of arguments about this, especially when it came to, like, the Mike Hughes situation. And I feel like there's no team that really adheres to best player available 100% of the time, despite the fact that a lot of people online will say that the best teams do that. I think it's obviously a mix of best player available and need. And so I've always, especially with the way the team is right now, the way that the things are and the needs that they have, that they can't really go that route again. It wouldn't surprise me, though. But, I mean, are you a best player available guy in general, or are you more of like a needs-based?
I'm a bit of both. I think there are certainly times when best player available is the way to go, especially if you have a really high draft pick. You know, if you're in a rebuild, if you are the, you know, Arizona Cardinals or the New York Jets or whoever, and you're trying to rebuild your team, you pick up the best player who's going to make the most plays for you, regardless of where he is on the field.
Yeah.
Now, if you're in a position where the Vikings are, you have to fill. You have your team put together, and despite what a lot of people think, you have a good team at most every position. There are few positions where you don't have NFL starter caliber players. So that leads you to say, and we didn't have any starting caliber guards before we brought in Josh Klein, and even Josh Klein had a down year last year, so they should be bringing in extra competition and backups and everything. But if you don't have an immediate, like, if you don't have, you know, one or two holes on your roster, if your roster is essentially all holes, you should be taking the best player available, because you can plug them in wherever. Now, if you're the Vikings and you're at 18, you can look at what holes you have and try to fill them, or you can look at the future and say, well, we're going to lose Trey Waynes after this year if we don't figure something out with his contract.
Yep.
And that's why I suggested Greedy Williams. As much as it's a joke, like, it would solidify the cornerback position even more. And I know people aren't going to like that, but after this season,
isn't that what Mike Hughes is for, though?
It is, but, you know, I mean, you know Zimmer, and I know Zimmer, and we know Spielman. They always want more cornerback depth, so I'm just saying, don't be surprised if they go there, and
don't
necessarily be upset, everybody. Not to the point of at least, you know, burning jerseys in the streets or whatever. Be upset, but don't be that upset.
I am putting it out there right now. If that happens, I'm actually angry at you for bringing it up right now. That would drive me absolutely insane. Oh my god, I wrote about this kind of in I can't remember what piece it was. I think it was in regards to the Stefon Diggs piece, covering the trade that wasn't, and talking about how I wouldn't be nothing with the team this that Spielman does would surprise me at this point, was my take, that it wasn't going to happen. You know, per I think it was the Schefter tweet about the F no. But basically, and we talked a lot about this on Slack, and I think I didn't communicate it very well when I was explaining it to you guys. But namely, that last year's draft, you know, a lot of people, and I've said this a million times on the show, so much so that Joe Oberle told me I need to stop saying it. But I am a Kirk Cousins apologist. I was a huge proponent of him coming here. And I'm not saying that because I think it was the wrong move now, and I'm like apologizing for it. But I felt like, okay, last year's draft, it was a bad move in multiple ways and increasingly bad ways, like that are coming to fruition right now. Namely, that you know, bringing in Hughes and then even O'Neal, when there was four or five plug and play. I think actually it was four guards between Hughes and O'Neal, and I listed those in the article, and three of them are actually looking like Pro Bowl caliber players, that move backfired because now they're going to have to trade an established piece, perhaps Trey Waynes or Xavier Rhodes, because of the Hughes pick. So basically the Hughes pick, instead of bolstering and building depth, so in a perfect world, the Hughes pick was supposed to bring depth to the cornerback position, but it was objectively at the detriment of the offensive line because they didn't take an offensive lineman, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if they were to trade Waynes or Rhodes, it not only did it hurt the offensive line, but it actually hurt the depth at the cornerback position because you're replacing an established corner with a guy coming off an ACL tear, which they couldn't have known at the time. But you get what right. I'm saying? Like it's like a double negative. It didn't work either way. And I understand it if Waynes, they can't afford him, and so that was going to happen anyway. But that was my overarching point, that it hurt the line, and then it hurt the position it was meant to provide depth to.
Yeah, and I think I responded to you with something along the lines of, you know, maybe they're just thinking about, you know, maybe they're literally thinking about three years down the road when Hughes is into strength, and they're just trying to keep that defense relevant. Now, obviously, I'm trying to play, you know, optimist of that situation. I'm trying say, well, maybe the Vikings are thinking of something that we're not.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, that doesn't make it any better this year or last year. Like,
yeah,
we have a window here that we could, you know, you went 13-3 and you lost the NFC Championship game. Like, why would you not be all in at that point?
And now, they seem to be at it's a weird mix, though, not to interrupt you, but like going for Bradford, for example, with trading a first round pick, that was an all in move to win right now, right? They didn't want to take another year with Teddy. The Kirk Cousins thing obviously was a win now thing. So I understand that you can do both at the same time if you thread the needle correctly, but at the end of the day, all this does, it just continually seems to be at the detriment of the line.
Yeah,
up until this point anyway.
Yeah, no, and I think frustration certainly is warranted at this point. But, you know, I'm of the opinion, and this is where a lot of my takes on stuff like this come from, I'm of the opinion that at the end of the day, it's a game and it's a team, and you should try to enjoy that. But I mean, obviously, like, you can be upset and you can question, but not to the extent that you're making, you know, team accounts lock Instagram posts of your quarterback and his son. Sorry, that's something else that happened.
Really?
Yeah, their cousins posted a video of him and his son doing something, you know, playing or whatever. And they had to lock the comments because they were so horrible. Like,
that is like next level awful.
Right, and that's why I say that, like, you know, I play, you know, the optimist, and I try to play the, like, well, maybe we don't know what's going on, because I don't want us to fall into that mentality, that weird echo chamber that happens between Facebook, Twitter commenters, Twitter, Instagram commenters, where they can say the most awful thing possible, and almost nobody will you know, challenge them.
Yes. You know why? And this is a philosophical thing, but it's important for me to communicate this as the owner of this network, because I strongly believe this. And a lot of it comes from how the site started and how I was treated on Reddit. Not like I feel bad for myself, or I don't want to sound like a victim or anything, but they were, like, for a while there, because I wasn't a Teddy is a top five quarterback guy back, like, right before he got injured, people hated me, and everything that I did was immediately downvoted, and there was, like, a roving group of, like, 15 guys who would just tell me to kill myself every time I posted something, and the admins weren't doing anything about it. And so when I created the sites, I basically said, like, I want to have an open network of communication, but the number one thing, and this applies to covering the team as well, is zero tolerance for personal attacks, right? Like,
right.
We can get very upset with each other about football topics and debate passionately, but the second that it turns into a personal thing is when I will, you know, block people from the site. And I also, the reason I bring this up is because I think the reason people get away with it is because there's this notion out in the world that you should take the high road when somebody is, you know, don't go down to their level. And those people don't interpret that as, wow, look how, like, morally superior that guy is. They think of it as, I just won because I shut him up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So all you do is encourage it. And so I have tried my best to not respond to a lot of comments. You know, we get it is frustrating, and I don't want to, like, boo-hoo for us, but when you write articles and you spend a lot of time researching, not that I am the biggest researcher, but you notice that people are only reading either the headline or the first paragraph and then jumping to a conclusion that the article didn't even come to. You know, that kind of stuff I let slide, but I've had a few old school journalist people that we used to work with that worked for newspapers that told me, like, you know, don't go down to their level, and you're not supposed to engage with readers that way. And I feel like the game is different now with the internet, obviously, and how connected we all are. But I very strongly do not believe in the high road, because it's what has emboldened these just dicks.
Yeah.
That's brutal, dude. I didn't hear about the cousins and his kid thing. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, well, it's so, you know, we question Kirk Cousins every single day. We question the signing of him. We question the contract, you know. But at the end of the day, he's a good, there are very few people in this world who I would, you know, consider, you know, bad enough to say you should be punished, or you know, you should have anything brought, any sort of violence brought against you. So, like, to say it about a guy like Kirk Cousins,
yeah,
and his child,
yeah,
it gets my, I get angry about that, because that is not something that is okay to anybody, but especially not to, like, someone who's done literally nothing wrong to you other than sign a contract that a team offered him.
And he's not, like, I could understand it. I still wouldn't do this regardless. But, like, it's not like he's Jamarcus Russell and he's not trying. You know, he tries so hard, almost too hard. And so, like, you can't be mad at his effort. It's just that, the season kind of went sideways. But, yeah, I mean, I do feel like a little more optimistic than I did, obviously, a week ago. I wanted your take on Klein. I think the biggest part that excites me about him, there's a few things. I like that he played for the Patriots, that he has five playoff games under his belt. He won a Super Bowl in his second season. He's a big dude, 6'3", 295, which is like exactly what I am at this point. So I'm
all muscle.
I'm actually juggling a car. But he has started 46 games in a row, and so that probably means he'll blow his Achilles out during like the first OTA. But you know, having a guy that is durable is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for sure, especially with what we've seen in the last couple of years with Nick Easton. That'll kind of transition later into something else to talk about Easton. But no, I like Klein as a player, and certainly I've looked at a little bit of his tape, and I've looked at the Pro Football Focus, you know, rankings, and you look at his last year. Last year was not good for him rating wise, but I couldn't understand from Tennessee fans. Some of them were saying, "Well, he's not really a zone blocker; he's a power guy." And then some people were saying, "Well, he's not really a power guy; he's actually a zone blocker." So I don't know what he is, what scheme he fits in, but either way, I'm excited about, you know, just the consistency of play and the potential to return to his, you know, playoff seasons in New England and getting us moving, and just having consistency. Yeah, I guess is the biggest thing.
So the Strib wrote an article about him, and they said that his style of play, they said outside of Cousins, Klein probably understands the offense better than anyone else on the team. That he played under LaFleur, the new Packers coach, and that he is cut from the same cloth as Kubiak and Dennison.
Okay.
So that's what I interpreted as what his best fit would be. Which, that's probably what excited me the most. I just skipped over it. So that's good news.
Yeah, and I think to hear that he is, a guy who will understand this offense, you know, immediately is really important, because I think one of the biggest things that people overlook when it comes to new guys and new, you know, sets and everything is, and we kind of saw it last year where like it all matters on your coaching, and it all, like, coaching has so much to do with the NFL, and it's ridiculous. You know, you come in and last year you don't have an offensive line coach because of the unfortunate passing of Tony Sperano. So you don't have anybody to make your offensive line gel and understand how to play in the offense.
Yeah.
So now you've got to get – if you're bringing in a guy who understands the offense and can become a leader from day one, that's incredibly important.
Yeah. And, they did a conference call with him, and he touched on that a little bit because he's, you know, 29 years old too, especially if we're going to bring in some younger guys in the draft. And he said that he isn't the most verbal guy, but, you know, if people come to him, he obviously helps them. So he said that's something he wants to build on and work on doing more of here. So I think you're right, man. That's like a huge part of this.
Yeah, and you don't have to be verbal to be a great leader. And you, even if you are verbal, sometimes you're not as good of a leader as people might think you are.
Like me.
I was going to say, we all know what happened with Alex Boone, who loved to run his mouth and then didn't ever really show up for the games.
Yeah. God, Alex Boone. I was so stoked for that move. You brought up Easton, and Joe Oberle is still on vacation. He's on this never-ending cruise, and he's basically, in the response to the Cheryl's move, said, you know, a few words George Carlin said you can't say on television about the Saints, as they're reminding me of the Seahawks from the late aughts, just taking every Viking available out of spite. And so, you know, Easton is gone, Cheryl's is gone, and Latavius Murray is down there too. In regards to Easton, you know, how did you feel about some of the things that he said and how people interpreted them about, you know, like, you know, well, I'll let you explain it, but...
Yeah, so something that was brought up in our internal conversation was Easton went on a radio show on Sirius XM, and he made the quote, and I'll quote it verbatim because I've got it right here. He said, quote, "Obviously you have a well-established offense and an unreal quarterback room that they have down there, not to mention one of the most well-respected offensive lines in football. It's pretty obvious why I chose to go down here, and I'm fired up to be part of it." Now, to me, that doesn't say anything bad about the Vikings.
Yeah.
He's just really excited to be in New Orleans. And I especially love Connor pointed this out. He said that in an unreal quarterback room down there, which means he's talking about Drew Brees and Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah. He did also say something about Sean Payton and saying, like, it's nice to have a coach that really understands football.
If he did say that, then that is definitely a slight against Zimmer and also kind of a dick move because Zimmer understands.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I'm reading into that a little bit too, but that's pretty much, that is exactly what he said. And you can't say Zimmer doesn't understand football. Maybe he doesn't understand the minutiae of running an offense, but the dude works 150 hours a week, you know, and he doesn't cheat, so that's there too.
He's also just not a giant D-bag. Sorry.
Yeah.
I think every Vikings fan hates Sean Payton, so.
How dare you?
How dare I generalize like that
to
the guy who...
How dare you tell the truth?
Continually mocks us and cheats.
Yeah, wasn't he doing the skull chant?
He was doing the skull chant right before the Minneapolis
Miracle,
which is awesome.
What a class act. I know. Isn't that great? That made that so much sweeter. I think, you know, I've always been a big Cheryl's guy. The last few seasons, it seems like he might leave, and then they always find a way to re-sign him. I did think that his request for more money, was it last offseason or the offseason before that, was going to be the end of his career here. You know, I don't think you can overstate, and I texted this, either I said this on Slack last night or I texted it to you. You can't overstate his impact from a special teams perspective. Sean Borman had a tweet picked up by Bleacher Report that basically said that Cheryl's is going to go down as one of the best special teams guys this team has ever had. And, you know, I'm a very high-strung person, and I get very nervous watching games. That's why I don't like to, like, be around human beings when I do it. And I never got nervous when we were receiving a punt. He had really great instincts in regards to when to fair catch, when to let things go. He rarely, if ever, fumbled. He was very good at turning nothing into something on a regular basis. He housed more punts than I think anyone in team history. And so losing him really sucks. And, you know, he does provide some depth at the cornerback position. I always felt like he's always in perfect position. He's just like 3 inches too short. Mm-hmm. But losing him sucks. And you have to wonder how much that ties into the Amir Abdullah re-signing and if they're going to have him do that. You also had a very good point that we shouldn't overlook a player coming in through the draft as a returner as well.
Yeah, I think it's certainly unfortunate to lose Cheryl's, and it's more than anything, I think it's an emotional blow to the fact that, you know, Sherrills went to John Marshall in Rochester. He's from Minnesota. He walked on at the U, played 4 years there, essentially walked on to the Vikings and you know, played for 8 years with the Vikings, you know, in some capacity, and again, like you said, is going to go down as one of the best punt returners, not only in team history, but in NFL history, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have, like, the big playability of Devin Hester, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to take, you know, four punt returns back a season, but he definitely was the most sure-handed, one of the most sure-handed guys out there, and just so consistent, and it's going to hurt to lose him, but I think people should also get excited for the fact that if we bring in the right draft pick and put him back there, we might see a more electrifying player, but again, I don't know if they'll be as consistent as Sherrills with the fair catches and the not fumbling and everything. And Kevin and I talked about this a little bit. You know, we had Adam Thielen back there returning punts at one point until he fumbled against Dallas in 2016.
Yeah.
And that essentially lost us the game, you know, among other things.
That was a really low scoring game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was super low scoring. We had a 2-point conversion to tie it at the end of the game, where Bradford got smacked in the face mask, very obviously. But you know, whatever, we'll let that one go, I guess. I'm still thinking about it. And I'm still mad, NFL.
Yeah,
but, you know. Adam Thielen is one of your best receivers. He's got some of the surest hands in the league when catching passes, but yet he still fumbles punts. Like it's a completely different skill set, and it's so unique, and people wonder why Sherrills had a roster spot for so long. Well, it's because nobody else, that position isn't like every other position. You know, the skills can transfer somewhat, but it's a completely different, you know, beast for the most part.
And Amir Abdullah, I think, has had some fumble issues in his career in the NFL, not so much in college. And I wrote an article about the re-signing of him and Dan Bailey, which we'll get into in a second. And I wanted to show people some of Abdullah's college highlights for those that didn't follow him at Nebraska. I watch a lot of Big Ten Network, Big Ten wrap-up show, stuff like that. And I loved him. I did think he was undersized for like an every down back, but I think as a pass catching guy, a change of pace guy, he's not dissimilar from Dalvin Cook in a few different ways. It's funny because I was watching one of those like All or Nothing or HBO training camp shows, and it was about the Cardinals, and they were feverishly trying to draft Abdullah, and they thought they had him. But the Lions took him the pick before their pick. And so they, like, the GM literally just started swearing, and they panicked, and they basically at the last second said, well, David Johnson, I guess? And
I guess
yikes.
David Johnson?
Yeah, you know, and it's like, how did that turn out? But I feel like, you know, he's had injury problems too, which is kind of a testament to what I said about his size. But there was one game that he had against the Vikings where he was almost like Barry Sanders-esque in regards to like how hard it was for the Vikings to tackle him and how just his jukes were next level. I'll try to find that clip and put it so people, because I'm sure people are like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I just like him because Nebraska's in the Big Ten now. But he can't really replace the Tay train, just because obviously the size difference and what they asked of Murray is probably going to be completely different than what they're going to ask him from Abdullah.
Yep.
But yeah, man, I mean, I'm for the move.
Yeah, and I think Abdullah was a good, as much as I was a little confused by it. I think it's a good re-signing because you have a consistent professional running back too, regardless of what happens. You can always run a stable of Cook, Abdullah and Mike Boone. And you won't... You know, you won't have that much of a drop-off. You're not running, say... As much as he was effective that 1 year, you're not running Matt Asiata, who can't do anything other than get you 3 yards. You know, Abdullah's got a little bit of shake and bake. He can do some things. Now, I mentioned Matt Asiata. They don't have a true power back right now,
yeah.
Which is why I think they should go in the draft and try to get one. I think I'll point out one of my draft prospects right now. Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State. I think he could put on a little bit more muscle, and he could learn to run the football a little more north and south, and he could be a very effective not only power back, but you know, spell back in general, because he has incredible hands, and he as long as he learns how to block, he could be, you know, easily a third down back as well as a power back, and that's a local kid who the team should definitely be looking at. But going back to Abdullah, the other point that I think someone made was that, well, Abdullah hasn't returned punts since he was at Nebraska in 2012, but it wouldn't be unlike the team to try to ask him.
I thought he did it in Detroit a little bit.
I'll check, but I'm just saying what their comment was.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they are correct or not. Let me double check. Defensive fumbles, kicks and punt returns. He has not returned a punt in the NFL, it looks like.
Weird.
But that doesn't mean he doesn't have the potential to and couldn't do it.
He did do it for the Vikings last year, once or twice.
Yeah, and it looks like he didn't actually return any. He might have fair caught a few.
Yeah, yeah.
But again,
I mean, they had him out there. So kind of whatever.
Yeah. So, you know, he probably can do it. It's just a matter of, you know, reawakening those skills and knocking the rust off and you know, working through that. And if that's what they brought Abdullah in to play, a Sherrills type role, to return punts, to return kicks, and then also, you know, every once in a while play in the backfield, I don't think it's a bad signing by any means.
Do you know how much they gave him offhand?
Oh, I can probably find it out super quickly. I think it was not a lot. It was, of course, they don't have it up on that yet.
Dude, check this out. I'm being such a homer, I understand that. 2012 at Nebraska, he had 1,137 yards, 8 touchdowns, an average of 5.0 yards per touch. 2013, he had 1,690, 9 touchdowns on the ground. He also had 2 receiving both seasons. A 6.0 average per carry. 2014, 1,611, 6.1, 19 touchdowns. On the ground, 3 through the air. Oh, man. I understand that college is a different game and that some guys just peter out. But that does, to me, you know, again, I mean, if he can overcome some of the injury stuff. And you know, I think the quote from Zimmer last year when people asked him, like, how they determine when to use Latavius now that Dalvin Cook was back, he said, you know, we'll put him out there every third series. And I do think that he could provide a spark off the bench that could be pretty cool. Especially because I don't think they gave up too much to keep him.
Yeah, I don't think they gave up very much. They haven't released details of his contract, it seems, but there's no way that he's getting more than, you know,
Sherrills would have.
More than like $1 million, and even that's probably too high. Considering the fact the Lions, well, I guess that was his rookie contract, but the Lions were paying him like $500,000 last year. So, I don't think he probably got very much at all. But to talk about punt returners and draft prospects, the other one that I was looking at as a potential punt returner and slot receiver is Andy Isabella.
UMass.
From UMass, yep. He's a small guy. He's like 5'9", I think, or 5'10". Maybe 5'10 on a good day. and he's got kind of shorter arms, so he doesn't have the catch radius, but that doesn't matter. He's incredibly quick, incredibly twitchy. You know, he could learn how to run routes from Diggs and Thielen incredibly well, and he doesn't have to see the field on offense to make a difference if he becomes, you know, a very good punt returner, and he focuses on that. You know, he can work his way up to being a part of the offense, but he's, from what I've seen on tape, he has the skills to make people miss, and then he has the speed to just turn it on and burn past people. So I was really excited to write about him because his tape is incredible, even if he is playing against a lower level of competition at UMass.
Do you know what his 40 was?
He tied for the best 40 among receivers with a 4.31.
Oh, my God.
He had the – and then that was – those two guys, him and Paris Campbell, tied for third overall. The only two above them were defensive backs.
Wow. And so – sorry, I was kind of reading, trying to find Abdullah's contract. So do you? You talked about the punt returning capability, which gets me frothy thinking about the combination of the skill set you said he had. But do you think he could fill in like an Aldrick Robinson type position? Perhaps be a consistent third down sort of guy or
a deep threat? I think he could. I think he could play exactly the role that Robinson played last year. I think I was looking at Robinson's combine stats, or Robinson ran something like a 4.41 or something. Yeah. But this guy's a full, you know, tenth of a second faster, which in game looks much more significant than, you know, on paper.
Yeah.
So I think definitely he could play the exact same role that Robinson did and play it maybe better than he did. If Thielen and Diggs are taking the defense away from him, I think he could potentially outrun any safety in the NFL, you know, other than maybe a couple. So I think to get him in there and let Cousins put it up there and have him go get it, you know, in the end zone would be very good, along with his ability to, you know, hopefully return punts and make a difference there.
Where do you think they could get him? Like what round?
He is projected to go in the third or fourth. So you would have to spend, you know, some of your higher draft capital. You know, he's not a late round guy that you can pick up. But kind of what we alluded to before, you have a lot more flexibility now.
And down maybe. That's true too.
If you trade down, and pick up, you know, a third or fourth rounder, you could pick up Andy Isabella easily.
Wow. I am a huge wide receiver geek. Like, I just obviously, I mean, I came to came of age during the Randy Moss thing. I was about 12 years old. That's when I finally like realized why my dad was so emotionally invested in football. And so, yeah, that makes me super excited. And wow, I had something I wanted to ask you about that. Maybe it'll come to me in regards to other I'm not just saying this because you're here. For people listening to this show, I will link to these articles, but these draft breakdown articles that Kirby's doing are really awesome. The testament to that is that Bleacher Report keeps posting them. And so if you really want to get caught up to speed on that, check out those articles, for sure. The one that obviously stood out to me, it was the Brandon Knight one. Mm-hmm. For obvious reasons, he's a Big Ten guy from Indiana. What is your if you want to let people know your take on him, where they might be able to get him, so on and so forth.
Yeah, Brandon Knight is he's projecting to go in the sixth round or later, so he would be a last couple of rounds kind of flyer guy. You don't usually... I don't want to say you don't expect value from those picks, but I think after you hit the fifth round, everybody after that is kind of like, we'll draft him and we'll see.
Yeah.
But Brandon Knight stood out to me because he is a lineman first and foremost. But he is a converted tight end who moved to tackle after his first year at Indiana. And he doesn't look like he's going to be able to play tackle in the NFL. He gets beat too much on the edge. People are able to run, you know, around him with their power. He doesn't have the anchor to play tackle. And he gets set up for moves too easily because he kind of leans.
Yeah.
But he has a ton of athleticism. So I think you could potentially see him move inside and learn how to play the center position. And playing the center position, in a zone blocking scheme, he could be very, very good. He also has an incredible football IQ. He has, you know, the instincts to know where pretty much everybody is on the field,
which is good as a center, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Like having him diagnose the linebackers and point them out, I think he could do an amazing job at that. And in the meantime, while he's, you know, riding the bench behind Pat Elflein and learning that position, I think you could also use his skill set to run him as a blocking tight end, you know, in those extra sets. We've seen Rashad Hill do those goal line sets where they bring in that extra tackle and report him as eligible.
Yeah.
But he has tight end skills still. He caught a touchdown at Indiana to seal their bowl bid his freshman year. I could potentially see him as a project center working his way up to, you know, build those skills while also being an extra tackle to bring in on goal line sets that you can, oh, all of a sudden he's, you know, he's leaked out and he's there for a pass. It's just, he's got a lot of potential, and he's also got some versatility that I don't think people really think about, because, you know, nobody thinks about how sexy the extra tackle set is.
I do.
nobody thinks tackles are sexy is what I'm getting at.
So earlier I told you that I'm the same size as an offensive lineman, and now I'm finding out that you don't find that body shape sexy. We're gonna have to have a conversation. So I have alluded to this a little bit on Slack, the internal chat thing we keep referencing, and it was more in reference to the Brett Jones situation, and I thought that maybe to help at the guard position, if we could put Jones at center, which he's played, we could potentially move Elflein to guard, which he played at Ohio State up until his junior or senior year, and it sounds like maybe not initially that's something they could do with Knight, but if you were to play center, you know, maybe they could upgrade at guard by moving Elflein to left guard, because it sounds like Klein's going to be the right guard.
Yep. Yeah, and I think Knight, you know, I've talked about Knight and his athleticism, but really it's the intelligence that, like, makes him desirable in my mind, because you bring guys in, especially linemen. I don't think you necessarily bring them in based on their size. Obviously size matters, but I think you bring them in.
That's not what my ex-girlfriend told me. She promised
it didn't matter. You bring guys in based on their intelligence and their footwork, and this guy has incredible footwork and incredible intelligence, especially for a guy who's projected to go in the sixth round. I think it could be the steal of the draft if the Vikings make it.
Wow. We have a few minutes left. I wanted to... So there's two guys. I'm going to go with Bruce Anderson because... I don't know how to pronounce that guy's last name. Egbuhl.
Emeki Egbuhl.
Okay. Anderson is a running back, and he's from NDSU, which some people might appreciate a little bit. And obviously, we've kind of talked about the running back position. And I was wondering your thoughts on him, his style, where you think he might fit in that rotation.
Yeah, I'm just going to mention Agbuehl just like very quickly because I think it's a good kind of teaser for people to go read the article. But
from Houston, Emeki, right?
Emeki, yeah, from Houston. He's a linebacker from the University of Houston. Emeki Agbuehl has the potential to be Anthony Barr, but he could be had for a sixth round pick. Okay, that's all I'll say about him.
Wow.
Yeah, go read the article. It's very read the article and then watch some of his highlights. He's very exciting. But Bruce Anderson, definitely if Bruce Anderson got drafted, he's like a higher round pick. I think he's third to fifth round or something like that. And fifth round is if he falls significantly. But he's such a patient runner behind his line up there at NDSU. You know, he had a great line, obviously. They're a great program for Division II, or not Division II. You know.
a good quarterback for a while.
Yeah, just an average, you know, runner okay
of the
guy.
Yeah.
But he's such a patient runner, which is something you don't see out of most college players. You know, they kind of, this is where the hole is, and I'm gonna hit that, and that's gonna, if it's not there, I lose 2 yards because I ran into my lineman.
The AP move.
Yeah, except AP's was like, oh, my lineman's right there. I'm gonna dance behind him for four minutes and then fall down. but no, Anderson is incredibly patient, and he kind of understands cutback lanes and how when to get outside. I guess the only real issue he has is he tries to bounce outside more often than he should. He should every once in a while learn how to get north and south and just go. But I mean that's kind of the trade-off with your patience as a runner is you're trying to make something happen. And you're not going to lose yards every time because you're just running into the back of your line, but every once in a while you will lose yards because you're trying to make something happen too much. But also he's just an incredible receiver of the football. I saw him make a couple plays that were ridiculously good, you know, for a back who wasn't used as a receiver at North Dakota. He could potentially be like a prototypical, you know, NFL back, and he could be as good as anybody in the game if, you know, depending on where he goes and what kind of workload he gets. But he's so exciting. He's a local kid as far as, you know, where he went to school. I think if he goes in the third or fourth round to the Vikings, that's exactly where they're looking to pick up that running back.
Yeah.
That extra guy, because they know Murray's gone and they know, you know, they know Mike Boone is there, but I don't know how much they trust him to be an extra back, like running back two, and then Amir Abdullah's a receiving back and kind of a gadget scat player, yeah, if you will. I think Bruce Anderson
he's 5'11", 202. Do you think he could be like a good goal line type guy? It sounds like it with his patience.
Yeah, I think if he, you know, he'll probably have to put on a little bit more muscle to become that power back. But I think at 5'11" and 202, he's definitely got the frame to put on a little bit more weight and then just run people over when he gets down there, or with, like you said, with the patience, you know, get behind his blocker and then make the cut that he needs to find that little seam to get that 1 or 2 yards to get in there. And I think being 5'11", Murray was what, 6? He was tall. He's tall for a running back.
I thought he was like 6'2", 225, because I thought he was like the same size as AP, just like a poor man's AP, basically.
6'2", or 6'3", 230. So, yeah, he's 4 inches taller than Bruce Anderson. And when you get down towards the goal line and you want to, you know, low man wins, and you got 4 inches that you, like, less that you have to get lower, and he's naturally going to have a lower center of gravity. I think he could be, you know, he could be that guy to get you 3 yards when you need it, but also he has the kind of versatility to become a three down back for a team. But I don't think the Vikings need a three down back right now.
Well, knock on wood. I mean, Dalvin Cook hasn't, you know, shown the ability to play a full season yet. So
yeah, and I think yeah.
You know, I don't think we can overstate the importance of having a RB2 that can do everything. You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be like a game breaking guy, but you know, Latavius Murray really showed his value. Mm-hmm. I am surprised that he went to New Orleans, considering he was saying he wanted to be a starter, and I'm sure there were teams that he could have done that with, but he must be chasing a ring, apparently.
I wonder how much money under the table New Orleans is paying all these players to get them to come.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either, to be honest. So yeah, that's the show. I mean, we have so much coming up. I do want people to know that we are going to be hosting the Day 2 Draft Party again this year. I'm hoping that we'll be able to, and I'm pretty sure, I can't see why, that we'll be able to do it in conjunction with Grey Duck Vodka. We're looking for a new location because the one that we were at last year, I don't believe is going to be big enough for the amount of people that we're going to be bringing. And so that's a Friday. It's the Friday night of the draft. I think it's the last Friday in April. Mm-hmm. It should be an amazing time. So keep an eye out for that for sure. But definitely just, you know, keep checking out the sites as we are posting new content every single day. Keep an eye out for Purple Territory Radio. And check out greyduckspirits.com. That's the website for Grey Duck Vodka. You can actually search by zip code and find where the closest liquor store is that carries it. They're actually in almost 700 stores. They are also, if you're in North Dakota, South Dakota, or Iowa, they just started selling in Iowa. And so they are in the 4-state region, and it's from everything that I've heard. I did an informal taste test at the liquor store with a bunch of vodka guzzling regulars, and they loved it. So it's good stuff. The price point is right, and you know, you can help support Chad Greenway, who is just a great guy. So thanks to everybody for listening. Definitely thanks to Kirby for coming on the show the last 2 weeks, filling in for Joe. We're going to try to figure out the best way to work together more in the future in the podcast realm. I think Kirby is going to be the third host of the Purple Journal podcast when we restart that, which we'll announce relatively shortly. But I've had a great time, man, and I appreciate it. And you are, honestly, one of the greatest guys that I've had the honor to work with, so I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Yeah, that means a lot to me, Joe. I'm, you know, this opportunity to be here and work with you and with the whole team has been just incredible. Just kind of my dream coming out of school and being able to make podcasts and make independent sports journalism that I think is some of the best around, certainly the best Minnesota Vikings coverage you'll get. And anybody can fight me on that one. We're the best site out there.
I really believe that. You know, I think that the stuff we're doing is just on another level, especially lately, like since you guys joined. It's just been I get so caught up in some of the business stuff sometimes. And I'm really impatient, so I feel like I'm not doing enough, mm-hmm. or that I'm letting people down. And then things happen, like yesterday we found out that we can now be on the conference calls for all new players or players that re-sign their contracts. They do these conference calls with the media, and that stuff is just like, it's surreal, you know?
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
It's so great, even in the time that I've been here, to see us grow and just to see like some of the numbers, some of the traffic numbers, some of the people that we're working with now, some of the sites, you know, Bleacher Report, there's that other one,
Sports Spider,
yep, and I'll give a formal shout out here on the podcast. Obviously, our whole team is great, but I'll give a formal shout out to the other two guys who kind of joined at the same time as me, Adam Nelson and Connor Wickland. Both of those guys have been just incredible writers and editors, and they're always around. And I love those two, and they make this thing kind of tick a little faster.
Yeah, you guys have been. I mean, I've been able to focus on sales and doing a lot of stuff that's gonna really pay off because you guys are just so awesome. And I will link all of your social media for people that want to follow you guys, because like I said, every day there's new content, and it's just been. I've never been more sure that this is the right thing to do. That foregoing another like. White collar business-to-business sales job that would just kill my soul. It was the right move, and so, God, man, we're on the precipice of some great stuff. So, thank you again, and thank you to all the people who have listened that are new to the show, that have been supporting us since 2015. Stay tuned because there's a lot of cool stuff pending. And we couldn't be more excited for the draft, for a training camp, and for the season. So this has been Morning Joe's. We should be back next Tuesday with Mr. Joe Oberle. We'll catch up with him, get his thoughts on some of the stuff that's been going on. And Vikings on the Clock, you said you'll have posted tomorrow?
Yep, the new episode will come out tomorrow. Then we'll have... We should have an episode every single week now up until the draft, including hopefully a really special one with Mr. Chad Greenway. I'm really hoping to get on there and talk with him, kind of about the draft prospect from the player's perspective, kind of get that look in, and also just to give me the chance to talk to Chad Greenway.
That's a done deal. So that'll happen right probably the week before the draft. And so stay tuned for that. But we will catch you guys next week. Skull.